Now they're going to be calling this communications is coming out from the national office. There's really directives to the employees of an agency. You know, now there's a formal name for it. It's called rules and regulations or regulations. And Congress is beginning to see that, you know, these agencies are operating in this fashion. Hey, there is this vast field of literature that demonstrates how these agencies are operating. And, you know, since this is obviously going on now and is certainly going to continue in the future, you know, Congress came along and said, hey, look, you know, we could come out in legislation and just issue some broad parameters for something. And then, you know, since we got a public official that's going to be administering this law and he's going to be writing rules and regulations to enforce this particular law, you know, we'll give him some authority to, you know, have an effect upon how the law is to be enforced, how the law is to be construed. Because that's exactly what was happening when you had a tax on dresses made of more than 50% cotton. You know, when the Secretary of the Treasury would come along and say, oh, this manufacturer has those types of dresses, so you collect the tax from them and not from this other company where the dresses are not of that fashion. You know, that's the type of thing that was going on. And Congress saw the benefit of making those instructions to the employees in the field have some weight. And so that's the reason why rules and regulations began to soon play a role in federal laws. Let's take a look at, let's move forward. You know, we had in 1894, Congress comes along and it passes a big, long tax bill that imposed taxes on imported goods. It was a tariff bill. But then in another part of that tariff bill, there was an income tax. You know, the Civil War income tax had been imposed in 1861, 1862. It was no longer in effect. It had been repealed by 1872. It was in operation for about 10 years. But by the time you get into the 1890s, you know, there was a public furor for an income tax. You know, the citizens of this country are looking at the J.P. Morgans and the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers and J.P. Morgans. Hey, look at those rich guys, man, you know. They got these incomes. You know, we need to tax those. So Congress comes along and imposes a tax. And now we also know that got shot down. The Supreme Court found it to be unconstitutional. You know, well, over that same time frame, you had Congress coming along and doing things like taxing estate and gifts, and imposing taxes on back during the Civil War, the way they drove the bank notes out of circulation is they imposed a tax of 10% upon all circulating state bank notes. That drove them out of circulation because it left only the greenbacks authorized by Uncle Sam and the bank notes issued by the national banks. By the time you get into the, let's move forward into time and get up to 1913. You know, the 16th Amendment on February 25th, Joe's birthday. Your Congress comes along and or Flander Knox says the 16th Amendment is ratified, 1913. By October 1913, Congress comes along and passes after they really had debated it. You know, how are we going to deal with this income tax? And so they worked on it for 6 or 7 months. And by October, they got it in shape. So they imposed it. And, you know, when you go, you can go over to my website. You can get into, you know, I've got two, yeah, the Dixieland Law. There you go, Joe. Let's go down to taxation. And now old tax acts and regulations. And here you have all the old tax acts, the income tax acts, starting with 1913. But, you know, down at the very bottom of the page, you know, I linked to the Civil War stuff. You know, here you can see, you know, go back up to 1913, Joe. Okay, there you go, 1913. Okay, click on that 38 stat 114. Let's see how many pages that is. Okay, 89. But a lot of it, you know, is, you know, since I linked off of the, you know, now the Library of Congress enables you to link to specific acts in the statutes large. And so that's what I've done here with the 1913 Act. But you got to go down to, I think you go down to page 166, I think is where you start the income tax show, 50 pages later. Well, the income tax is in there. And, you know, the income tax, off the top of my head, let's say it's about 20 pages long. Well, you know, now you got a new tax. And, you know, you had then at that time, you had existing taxes being collected by the Secretary of the Treasury. And there had been created during the Civil War, although that office didn't last very long. You know, the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, you know, they also had taxes on booze back in those days. But here you got a new tax. And so you can, I don't know where it will be, but you know, the Congress comes along in this particular act in reference to the income tax. Yeah, there you go, section two, that's the beginning of the income tax. And so we're at page 53. So I would say, you know, 30 pages are devoted to the income tax in 1913. But, you know, you'll find as you go through here, it was the commission, it was the Secretary of the Treasury that was given the authority to administer and enforce the income tax. And of course, he would in turn, since he had this guy known as the Commissioner of Internal Revenue below him, he would quite often delegate to the commissioner responsibilities. And of course, the income tax is historically, yeah, under rules and regulations prescribed by the Commissioner of Internal Revenue with the approval of the Secretary of the Treasury. Oh, that's that. Well, okay, that relates to the collection of the tax. You know, see, even there, you know, in reference to other taxes, the Secretary of the Treasury had delegated responsibility for those other taxes to the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. And so this new tax comes along and he does the same thing in reference to the income tax. You know, Secretary of the Treasury's got a whole lot more responsibilities than, you know, just a tax collection. And so the brunt of collection of taxes for a long period of time has been with the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. But now, Joe, let's kind of back out of this. Now, you can do all down this page, you can see the 1916 Act, 1917 Act, the 1918, the 21, 24, 26, 28, 32, 34, 36, 38. You know, all of those acts were Congress is coming along and, you know, expanding the income tax. And you can say, so Joe, here we have the Revenue Act of 1936, Regulations 94. Click on that. And years ago, I copied the, yeah, there it is. That's what I made those copies in the late 90s. Got it. Cumberland School of Law, Stanford University. Then we scan them. And of course, there are cleaner versions out there today, so, but that's the one that, you know, the original that I did. But you can plainly see when you're over there on that page, Joe, back out of that and go back over to the taxation page. You can plainly see when we go, you know, go up to the top, 1913, Act. Okay, well, that's good. That's good, Joe. Let's just start there at 1918. So the Revenue Act of 1918 comes along, and you click on that, but we don't need to do that. But, you know, that act itself said, oh, well, the Commissioner of Internal Revenue and the Secretary of the Treasury shall have authority to implement regulations for the enforcement of this act. You know, by this stage, you know, for 25 and maybe 30 years at this time, you know, regulations of government agencies have been prominent and Congress was using them. And, you know, the regulations were really, they really start off with, if you sit down and look at them, it is the way that the agency will be interpreting the act that they are enforcing. really all of the original regulations were interpretive. And when you said, and there was a need for that, you know, Congress comes along, imposes a tax on gains, profits, and income derived from wages, salaries, and compensation for services. You know, the people out in the field, what does that mean? They can go to these seminars, they can be taught what to do. You know, there was still a need for, in writing, what is the fundamental position of the Treasury Department? What is the fundamental position of the Commissioner of Internal Revenue as to what these words in the law mean? And so a set of regulations would be, you know, that, hey, this is the way we think it works. This is the way we are going to construe this law. Now, that's the way regulations first started off. You know, there's this progression from, you know, late 1700s all the way through all the way up to the Civil War in reference to the 19th century. You know, these instructions to the agents in the field didn't have a prominent role, but after the Civil War, you know, the instructions from the Washington, D.C. office to agents out in the field for telling the people in the employ of that agency how to construe a particular law that they were administering, that became, there was so much proliferation of that, as you can see if you go into a law library, you know, that, you know, Congress started to say, these are going to become new rules and regulations. And so that's the way rules and regulations became formalized. And so by the time you get into, you know, here in 1916, 1917, you know, for about 20 and 30 years, regulations of agencies were really important. And hey, Joe, click on regulations 45. Yep, either one of them. Okay, how much did they cost? Okay, go back to the other one. How about the first regulation? What were the regulations we pulled up a minute ago?
They were the regulations.
Go further down the page. Go down to the Revenue Act of 1934. Reg 77, I think it is.
32 is 77, 34 is 86.
Okay, pull up Regs 86. Yeah, okay. Look down at the bottom. For sale by the Superintendent of Documents, Washington, D.C. Now, this document, we have a 249 PDF pages in this, but each page of the PDF, I copied two pages each. So you've got, you know, basically this, there were 500 pages in this book, and you bought it for 35 cents. And this was the official interpretation of, you know, this is the Revenue Act of 1934. And it was the instructions to the agents in the field, how they were to administer this law. You know, the secretary is in and the commissioner say, this is the way we construe this law. And that's the way they construed it. So by this time, you know, these instructions to the field for employees in the field, and they've taken on the name of rules and regulations. And, you know, they've now become so prominent that, you know, gee, the courts are beginning to notice them. I mean, Congress has certainly been noticing them because it's been telling the officials of the agencies to write rules and regulations. Now, here's where, with this background, there's something that happened about this time that brings into play, you know, what Sean was talking about, those classes. You know, they got legislative types of regulations. You got interpreted regulations. In 1935, Congress comes along and see here you got this set of books. Is printed. This is in 1934. You got an order, you got to pay 35 cents. So if you're an accountant and you wanted to get the treasurer regulations, you set 35 cents up there to Washington, D.C., and you could get this set of regulations, which was, you know, 500 pages of print. Well, in 1935, you know, you had so much of this training activity going on. Congress says, oh, well, we need a federal daily newspaper. And so in 1935, oh, wow, $2 per year. That's 50 cents per copy. Wow. Okay. Congress created a federal newspaper for all of the government agencies in 1935. It's called the Federal Register. And the first issue of the Federal Register came out in March of 1936. And this law said, oh, well, you know, all of you agencies are publishing all these regulations. We want these regulations to first be published in one official spot, the official newspaper of the federal government called the Federal Register. And then after they had that going for a couple of years, in 1937, Congress comes along, passes another law. Okay, now that we've got, you know, the Federal Register being published, and incidentally, you can go over to the, it's on the internet at the Library of Congress, and I've got it linked off of my website, but you know, I can't tell you, we'd have to do some searching for it. But you can go over to the Library of Congress website, and they've got now every issue of the Federal Register posted online. You can download it. So, you know, if you want a May the 10th of 1939 issue of the Federal Register, you can get it. You can go over to the Library of Congress, Library of Congress that does it, or the, you know, there's places on the internet where you can get all of the Federal Register. It's just there for downloading, and it's also word searchable. These are PDF images that are word searchable. But by 1938, you had this requirement. Now that the government agencies have been compelled to publish regulations first, not within their little printing office, now they got to publish them first in the Federal Register. You know, 1938, Congress comes along and says, oh, okay, now that we've got you agencies doing that, now you have to codify your regulations. And so all these agencies, you know, by that time we had in 1926, Congress had created the 50 titles of the U.S. Code. And so when they created the Federal Register, the Code of Federal Regulations in 1938, you know, they told the agencies to codify their regulations. And so the tax regulations administered by the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, they went into Title 26. The Treasury Department regulations, they went into Title 31. You know, all of that was created back in 19, the titles of the Code of Federal Regulations, that was created by law in 1938. Now let's move forward into time. In 1946, after spending 10 years studying this issue, Congress passed a law to create the Administrative Procedures Act. Now, what was one of the purposes of the Administrative Procedures Act? Administrative Procedures Act was really, you had these agencies were running around in administering these laws. You know, let's say like you were an interstate truck driver. And you had the boys at the Department of Labor or whoever was in charge of administering those laws, the Department of Commerce, you know, they had a procedure set up. You know, they would make complaints against people. Oh, you're violating the law. Well, you know, there was a lot of that going on. You had the Bureau of Internal Revenue doing the same thing, you know, creating these controversies with, you know, people that were allegedly subject to these laws. And so there was a need for, you know, a uniformity or, you know, some parameters for these agencies if they're going to be using administrative procedures against the regulated public. You know, there needed to be a federal law telling them, hey, you folks in the agencies created an administrative procedure. And so that was the purpose of the Administrative Procedures Act. Right, Joe. 1946 is when it came out. And we're still today, you know, you can go over to Title 5 of the United States Code and find the administrative procedures. Now, what's important for us is that, you know, the Administrative Procedures Act came out and said that, you had rules and regulations being issued by these agencies at that time. And so they set up a procedure for, you know, a more formal way of adopting regulations. And so an agency, if it was getting ready to come out with a new regulation, it was required to publish it first in the Federal Register and then give opportunity to the public to comment. And the public could see the proposed regulation. You know, they'd be reading the Federal Register and they'd see this proposed new regulation, and they were authorized to comment. And so the agencies had to set up this procedure for allowing comments on proposed regulations. And then, you know, then even if you made a noteworthy suggestion and the agency didn't adopt it, hey, you could turn around and sue. You know, this regulation that was newly enacted by this agency, you know, is void or invalid, or, you know, there are a lot of arguments you could make to attack new proposed regulations. So by this stage in 1946, you got this command that all regulations shall be published first in the Federal Register. New regulations are going to be subject to public comment and challenge. Legal challenges could be made too. So that's the way, you know, this is the background. I hope during this period of time I've shown to you that, you know, we have this way of creating these commands to employees of federal agencies out in the field. They were first, you know, printed up. That process eventually evolves into regulations. You know, there's a name for that type of stuff. Congress sees that this type of stuff is going on. These agencies are coming out with these formal documents that, you know, tell their agencies, the people that work for the agencies, how this law is to be enforced. All of us call those regulations. And so by the time you get into the 30s, now these regulations have got to be published first in the newspaper of the federal government, the Federal Register. And then later on, you know, they're going to have to be codified. And then after, you know, even after you get them to be codified, any new regulations are going to go through this formal adoption procedure that allows the public to, you know, comment on them. Now that's, you know, I hope that this 45 minutes that I've spent explaining how regulations, you know, what's the history behind them, you know, I think that's beneficial. And now you begin to understand, you know, a little bit more about what a regulation is. Now, you know, Sean started off as saying that there are different types of regulations. You know, there are legislative regulations and there are interpretive regulations. Well, let me tell you the difference between the two. You know, a law of Congress could come along and say, and there's, you know, there's some of these inside the Internal Revenue Code. You know, the law will say, you know, in a certain set of circumstances, you know, the party, the public official that's in charge with administration of this law, you know, it can, to implement this law, prescribe regulations. So for a law like that, you know, when the, you know, let's take the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, Congress could come along and, you know, let's say that, depreciation schedules. You know, they've authorized the Commissioner of Internal Revenue to do something about creating depreciation schedules or documents that relate to, you know, depreciation for businesses is real important. And, you know, the depreciation and basis for depreciation, you know, you start off with Section 1001 of the Internal Revenue Code and going on up into, you know, 30 or 40 sections into the 1000 series. You know, the law could simply say, you know, well, gee, you know, for a limited purpose, you know, the Commissioner of Internal Revenue or the Secretary of the Treasury, you know, shall implement regulations to, you know, enforce this section of the code. Well, you know, that type of regulation is what is called a legislative regulation. You know, Congress has given a command to the agency. You know, there's a parameter for it. You know, there's criteria for coming out with a document, a rule or regulation that is going to implement that law. Now that's what's called a legislative type of regulation. Well, what are these other types of regulations, the interpretive type of regulations? Most